The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to Noah Your Rights, the show dedicated to helping educate you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available. Our goal, to empower and put you in charge of your case. I'm your host, Attorney Noah Davis, broadcasting live from the studios of KLAY 1180 in Tacoma, Lakewood, Washington. Be sure to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com, as we post the audio for each show as well as follow-up information on each program. You can also email me at noah@noahyourrights.com. There's two R's in there. Be careful of that. You can also visit clay1180.com, that's K-L-A-Y-1180.com, for more information on me, this show, and additional programming on your conversation station. This is episode number 30 of Noah Your Rights. Able. A-B-L-E. That's our word and topic of the day. What we're going to try to do today is to use the term able to enable some of you to plan ahead. Yeah, I'm being a little cryptic. I get that. So what am I talking about with able? Well, for purposes of today's show, able, A-B-L-E, it's an acronym. It's an acronym for a U.S. law titled Achieving a Better Life Experience Act. Achieving a Better Life Experience Act. That's able. It's something we all want, right? Achieving a better life. Well, this act isn't geared to just anyone. It's not geared to all of us. It's a disability savings account. It's a type of 529 savings account. You may have heard Clark Howard on the show on this station. It comes on earlier in the day. You might have heard him talk about these 529 accounts that people use to put away money for their children's future for educational expenses. Well, the type of account that we're going to talk about today, these ABLE, ABLE accounts, it's a type of 529 savings account too. And maybe it can be a type of GoFundMe or crowdraising or other type account, a way to raise money for persons with disabilities. But it's a little bit different because this one's authorized. It's not like just a straight GoFundMe or crowdraising type site because this one's authorized by law and it's not going to count against the beneficiary's income limitations. That's a big deal. It's a really big deal. About 57 million Americans, or 19% of the population, have a disability or identify themselves as a person with a disability. That's according to the last census in 2010. And it's similar in 2015, the half-decade census has similar numbers. It's basically one out of every five Americans identify with some form of disability. I don't know if every one of those disabilities, and probably the easy answer is that the case is not, but I don't think that every one of those disabilities would qualify under this ABLE account, savings account that we're going to talk about today. But we're talking about a significant number of Americans having a disability, and it means that a significant number of people care for those individuals that have disabilities or know someone with a disability. So that means for you, the listener, that means for us, the population, it means that this topic is relevant, it's important, so don't tune out. You're going to want to stick around, and you're going to listen to this new law, this ABLE Act, that was came out, I believe, in 2014, so it's really relatively recent. A lot of people don't know about it, and they don't understand it. So we're going to tackle that issue today. Joining me on Noah Your Rights, we're going to have two guests to help explain how ABLE accounts work are David Bell and Julie Robinson. David's on the line with me. We're going to go ahead and welcome him in. David, can you hear me there?
I can. Thank you so much for letting me come on with you.
Yeah, welcome to the show. So are you ready and able to talk about ABLE accounts today?
Yes, I am.
All right, David, you are the Deputy Director of the Oregon Savings Network. Can you tell us a little bit about the Oregon Savings Network and how it's involved with ABLE accounts?
Sure. The Oregon Savings Network is a division within the Oregon State Treasury. So we're just one small division within Oregon State Treasury. So I work for the state of Oregon. The savings network was set up because we manage three state-sponsored savings plans. One, which we're talking about today, which is the Oregon ABLE savings plan, and help with some other state savings plans, including Washington State, which we can talk about later. The Oregon College savings plan, and a very new savings plan called Oregon Saves, which is a secure choice savings plan. It's a retirement-based savings plan for those individuals that work for a company that doesn't offer a company savings plan.
Okay, well, let's take a step back and let's start from the beginning, I guess. And that's, can you explain to us what an ABLE account is and then why it's important to talk about?
Yeah, sure. And I like to strip it down. ABLE accounts are a lot of things. And I think throughout the time we have, we can talk about all the details there. But really, just stripping it down to the most basic, let me just explain why ABLE was set up to explain what it is. Before ABLE accounts came around, there was very limited opportunities for people with disabilities to be able to save money. And the reason behind that was, is many of the state and federal benefits that they needed to survive on, and that could be Social Security benefits, it could be medical benefits like Medicaid, those benefits often come with very low asset limits. So in order to stay on those benefits, people with disabilities had to basically stay under $2,000 of total assets in their name. And so they were required basically to stay in poverty in order to stay on those benefits. ABLE came around as a solution for that. So to answer your question on what ABLE is, it's a state-sponsored savings plan. Any money saved in an ABLE account cannot count against those asset limits. So it's a place for people with disabilities and their families to save money without getting kicked off of vital state and federal benefits.
Well, and I see in my practice, this issue comes up a lot. And I got to tell you, before today's show, I didn't know what an ABLE account was or what the benefits were. So this is an important topic for me too. And the reason is I end up doing personal injury related cases. And sometimes those cases involve a person with a disability. Sometimes the accident caused the disability. And there's a concern about qualifying for federal and state assistance and yet getting a settlement which would disqualify you from that. So does this ABLE account, is one of the ideas to tackle that sort of situation?
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's other tools out there available as well, which I believe you know about and maybe some listeners know about. They could be special needs trusts. Sometimes states will have a pooled trust through a provider. Those are great opportunities as well. But yes, the ABLE savings plan was supposed to be another tool for people with disabilities to be able to save money without losing those benefits. The main impetus behind ABLE is they really wanted to empower people with a savings account that can work almost exactly like a bank account. So easy access for money to go into the ABLE accounts, easy access for money to come out. Didn't want to penalize people for having a disability simply because they were saving money.
Well, that's a big change from the traditional method that lawyers like myself would use if we helped a client set up some type of account to take in the funds that they were going to get in a settlement, because they couldn't get it directly. It couldn't go into their account directly or their parents' account directly. It had to be, and you mentioned this a moment ago, it had to be some type of special trust, special needs trust. And the problem with the special needs trust, and maybe you have some experience with this too, and when Julie comes on, we'll ask her about it, but those can be really complicated. They can be extremely expensive, complicated, and clunky. And maybe just after the break, you can tell us a little bit more about your experience with that. Maybe we'll get Julie on here too, and maybe we can compare the ABLE accounts, savings accounts, a little bit to the special needs trust. You're listening to Know Your Rights on KLAY 1180.
You wanted to see me?
Jack, legal has some concerns about the new Jack in the Box marketing campaign.
Why? It just says my teriyaki balls are better than ever, with your choice of steak or chicken, plus veggies and white or brown rice covered in our teriyaki sauce. And then everyone's gonna love my bowls.
Right. You can't say that last part.
So I can't talk about my sweet bowls?
No.
Can I say my bowls are meaty?
Absolutely not.
But I already put up the billboard that says enjoy my bowls.
Oh, no.
Try my teriyaki bowls, only at Jack in the Box. Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there. See how we can help you. And if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
Hey parents, it's hard to pick up your kids nowadays without embarrassing them.
Hi, honey.
Not in front of my friends.
Well, kiss the embarrassment goodbye with OMGPS. OMGPS is a state-of-the-art navigation system that tells you exactly how far away you need to park when you pick up your kids.
Keisha at mall. Proceed to outer food court.
But she's not at the food court. She's at the movie theater.
Exactly. OMGPS comes with patented preteen reasoning technology to pinpoint precise pickup locations and minimize embarrassment.
In 100 yards, turn off the oldies music.
Thanks, OMGPS.
OMGPS is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights, the show dedicated to educating you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available. This is episode number 30. We're talking ABLE accounts today. On with me is the deputy director. That's the official title that I should be giving you, David. But it's David Bell, and he's with the Oregon Savings Network. And David, you've got strong familiarity with today's topic, these ABLE accounts, where a lot of us don't have that background or that familiarity because it's really a relatively recent addition to the toolkit for these types of accounts. I mean, it really is maybe not even a recent addition to the toolkit. It's a new toolkit that's available out there. And maybe you can talk about, again, why this ABLE account is so unique. And then before the break, you know, I asked you maybe to think about some differences with the special needs trust, if you could talk about that too.
Yeah, I can do that. And in fact, I think some of those will just play into each other. Yeah, these ABLE accounts really are an incredible tool. I was involved from the very beginning here as we were building out these accounts. Like you mentioned at the beginning, they started, at least the federal legislation was passed at the very end of 2014, which seems like a long time ago. In fact, it feels like a long time ago for me. But it really, when it comes to these types of things and building out a brand new account and a process, it really was pretty recent. So it passed at the end of 2014. In 2015, most states were busy approving and passing their own state legislation, which allowed them to tap into that federal legislation and create these savings accounts. And that's a key piece to this, is that these savings accounts have to be administered by a state. A local bank or an organization cannot administer an ABLE account. And so it's important for listeners to know that if they walk into a bank and ask to set up an ABLE account, if that bank doesn't understand what they mean and sets up a normal savings account for them, it's not going to be protected. Those assets are not going to be protected the same way they would be in ABLE. But I can jump into this, specifically giving more information what ABLE is and how it can work with and how it's different than a special needs trust. I say all this to say that in 2014, federally it passed, and 2015, states were passing the state legislation, and it really wasn't until the middle of 2016 until the very first stable account or the very first ABLE account opened, and that was in the state of Ohio, and the rest of us started launching our ABLE plans really quickly after the state of Oregon launched ours in December of 2016. And I'm very, very happy to announce that the state of Washington just recently, last month, launched their ABLE plan as well, and that's Washington State's Able Savings Plan. So
we probably just copied Oregon. That's the easiest way to do it.
Inadvertently, yes. And I say that just because the state of Oregon and Washington State, along with Maryland and Connecticut, we've all kind of come together to share best practices, and we've joined something that we call the Able Collaboration so that we can share ideas. And yes, our Able plans are very similar, only because we're working really closely together to set up and run these ABLE plans. Washington State's ABLE plan is amazing. But I should probably go into more detail about what these are. Again, like I mentioned, they are savings accounts. They have to be opened up online. Unfortunately, there's not a mechanism to allow somebody to walk into a brick-and-mortar site, a building, and set up an account. You can use paper forms. Every single state that offers an ABLE plan has a paper form that someone can use, but essentially it's an online bank account. That's how it looks and feels. You set up the account online, you manage your account online, you put money into the account, and I can get into the mechanisms on how that's done, and you can immediately take the money out of that account as soon as it does all its official clearing and such. As we were mentioning before, it's a tool to help people save money without losing their state and federal benefits. And it's not the first tool for this. We mentioned the special needs trust before. Those are amazing tools for people with disabilities and their families. And let me explain a little bit about the difference and why you might want to use one or actually both. And I'm no expert on special needs trust. Noah, you can jump in here because it sounds like you have a lot more understanding on them as well. But basically, those are trusts that you would set up with a lawyer. They are complicated. That you do need help to set up one of those accounts. Sometimes it can be a little bit expensive to set up an account because you need to use a lawyer. And there's a little bit of more of a process for putting money in and taking money out. But with a special needs trust, there's really no limits on how much money you can put into these accounts, and a lump sum amount can go into those accounts.
That's really the key difference that I'm seeing right now is that these ABLE accounts, and you can tell us about some of those limits here in a second, but there are limitations about how much money can be stored or saved in these accounts versus a special needs trust, which can be unlimited in amount. So if you're talking about a really large sum of money coming in for some reason, whether it's a personal injury settlement or some type of fundraising sort of deal, the special needs trust might be the appropriate mechanism to store those funds over the ABLE account.
That is exactly right, Noah. So to let people know about some of these limits on ABLE accounts, for one, ABLE accounts are very inexpensive to set up and to manage, and we can talk about fees later, but there are some limits, and these are limits that were set on us by the federal government, and we follow these. So one of the limits is how much money you can put into an ABLE account each year. And right now that amount is $15,000. Now that's tied to something else that will slowly increase year after year. But right now you can only put in $15,000 per year. Now for some that's plenty, but it's not plenty if you have a large settlement or if you have a large amount that you want to put in each year. And so you'd want to look elsewhere to a special needs trust. There are two other limits. One is just an overall ABLE limit. Now, this differs from state to state. In the state of Oregon, our total limit used to be $310,000, and our ABLE board just last month changed this to $400,000. I say that just to say that states get to decide how much total you can put into the ABLE account. So over the lifetime of the ABLE account, you can contribute up to $400,000. When it hits that amount, you can't put any more in. The account can still grow, but you can't put more in until it drops back under that $400,000.
I see.
That's the total limit.
And what's that $100,000 limit that I saw out there? Is that in relation to just one type of federal program?
No, you hit that right on the head. So I tell those first two limits because those are the low amount, the amount you can put in per year, that $15,000 right now, and that total amount, which I said was $400,000 for the state of Oregon. I'd have to look into exactly the total amount for Washington State. Excuse me for not having that right offhand. The other limit that Noah just mentioned is $100,000. This is only tied to one federal benefit, and it's Supplemental Security Income. It's SSI. It's done through Social Security. So if a person with a disability is using SSI and wants to stay on SSI, instead of pretending the $400,000 is their limit, you just want to think of the $100,000 your limit. I'm not sure why this extra limit got snuck in there, but it did. Most savings plans, like Oregon College Savings Plan, will notify everybody when they're getting close to that $100,000 limit, and then the people can, the person who's using the account owner, can say, no, go ahead and let that grow and go over $100,000. I don't care. Or they might select, you know what, I need to stay on SSI. Go ahead and hold me under this amount, and we'll help them do that.
So for folks that are receiving benefits from different sources or multiple sources, if SSI is just one of those sources, maybe it doesn't matter. They can exceed the $100,000. But if that's the only source, that might be a more material issue.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right.
So practically speaking, let's talk about how people qualify for these types of accounts. Can anyone say, well, I believe I have a disability. Can I set up this account for myself? Or what are the qualifications? And is it state law based or federally based to qualify for one of these types of accounts?
Interesting question. It is federally mandated, the eligibility requirements that I'll outline right here. And they're fairly, we would love to see them more open. But they're fairly open. We're pushing for it to be even more open than what it is. So here's the limitations. There's basically two. To be eligible for an ABLE account, the disability would have had to start before the person's 26th birthday. It sounds funny. There's no medical reason behind this. It's much more of a political reason. This was basically an age that they had to attach onto the bill in order to pass the bill through Congress. And I could go on forever about that, but I'll hold it at that. So the disability had to start before the age of 26. Doesn't mean the person has to be younger than 26. We have people in our account that are in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, but the disability had to start before their 26th birthday. That's the first one. If they can say, yes, this started before my 26th birthday. The second one is tied to the severity of the disability. And really, to simplify this as much as I can, if somebody would qualify for Social Security or Medicaid benefits, some disability benefits, mainly Social Security benefits, if they qualify for those, they qualify for ABLE. So basically someone is saying, yes, my disability started before the age of 26, and yes, I qualify for Social Security or Medicaid benefits, even if I'm not using them. If someone's still not comfortable with this and say, you know what, I feel like it's hard for me to answer those questions, we have a very simple physician's form that they can print off and take to their doctor, and their doctor can fill it out, and that certifies them. Now, all of this is self-certification. We're not asking them to send in their form or to prove, but we're asking them to be ready to prove if any other agency ever asks them. And as far as I know, we've never had any agency ask. We're not going to ask. It's self-certification. Those are the ways.
Right. And I can see that issue coming up in, it could probably come up in a varied ways, but the way that I see it coming up is sometimes I do Social Security type cases, SSI, disability cases, and there's an onset date. That's what the court ends up adjudicating, or Social Security will adjudicate or determine an onset date. So if you're already receiving SSI or a federal disability benefit through Social Security, you're going to have an onset date already determined by Social Security. If you contest it, then you go to court and you can get a decision there. It's unique what you're saying about this sort of self-reporting, saying, well, I have a disability. I've taken this form to my doctor. The doctor certifies that the onset date was prior to my 26th birthday, so 25 years, 364 days. That's when my disability started.
Right.
And then if it ends up being a significant sum of money being paid out on both ends into the ABLE account and then also as a benefit, you could have Social Security coming back saying, wait a minute here. We're paying out a ton of money. We see that you also, because, that makes me think of another question, and that's a reporting question, but I don't want to go too far down this road before the break, because we're going to take a short break. I'll come back. I'll ask that question, and I'll ask it in a better and a clearer manner when we get back. You're listening to Noah, Your Rights on KLEY 1180 AM.
When the day turns into night, my hash browns turn into my jack-in-the-box $3 munchie mashups. Hash browns and tasty white cheese, mashed up with your choice of savory egg and bacon, buffalo chicken and ranch, or jalapenos and bacon, each for just $3. Because everything gets more interesting at night. Vampires wake up,
Oh, 9 p.m. already?
Mommy's unwind.
Hot tub nice.
And the boogeyman gets his boogie on. So come try my late night munchie mashups, back for a limited time, each for just $3. Only at Jack in the Box, at participating restaurants.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there, see how we can help you, and if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
This is the story of a boy wizard whose name was Larry Smarter.
Larry, why weren't you in Professor Dinky Doodle's mythical creature classification class?
Larry wanted to go to college, so he visited knowhowtogo.org to find which classes he really needed.
You missed the lesson on telling dragons from dragonflies.
Right. I want to go to college, so I'm taking Algebra 2, Biology, and a foreign language.
Foreign language? You mean so you can talk to unicorns?
Well, not exactly. Unless they're French.
But Larry had no time for unicorns, or even for Miss Petunia Tutti's time-traveling tutorial, which met every other yesterday at 25 o'clock.
Sorry I'm late. My snarkball game went into overtime.
And he knew knowhowtogo.org was way better than hoping for a snarkball scholarship. So, while his friends all aced invisibility, when Larry finally got to college, they were nowhere to be seen.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Noah, Your Rights, a show dedicated to helping educate you on your legal rights and resources available. We are talking ABLE accounts today, a special type of disability savings account that has special status. On the phone with me is David Bell, Deputy Director of the Oregon Savings Network. David, just before the break, I was giving you a convoluted example of a situation that that I can envision coming up, and that's because of my my dealings with the Social Security Administration and issues, contests over onset date and whether or not the person had a disability or not. So what'll happen in my cases is either there'll be a particular onset date that's determined by Social Security, or the Social Security judge will determine that date. And so that'll be set in stone. So for people to be eligible for these type of ABLE accounts, you said if they're receiving Social Security, SSI, SSDI already by their 26th birthday, then they're going to be automatically eligible for these ABLE accounts because we have like an official record. That other side of the coin, though, is people that claim a disability before the age of 26. They approach the, for example, your institution, the Oregon Savings Network, and they say, "All right, what do I do? How do I open up these accounts?" You said that there's a form that you provide they can take to their doctor. The doctor would then certify a disability onset of that took place before age 26, so 25 years and some number of days, but they pick an onset date for you. The two questions that I guess I have, and this isn't going to come up unless someone disputes the benefits that they're receiving, and that's usually going to be a public agency, usually the feds. But if it does happen, what the questions I want to throw back at you are, what type of disabilities are going to qualify? Because the federal test for Social Security is, I don't have it right before me, just going on memory here, but it's got to materially interfere with the ability to to work a certain number of hours a week, or materially participate in basic life activities, you know, something like that. I should actually look up in a moment and get the actual standard. But there is a standard that they have to meet in order to be deemed disabled under the federal statutes and Social Security Administration. So how does that play into the ABLE account?
Yeah, it gets very, very, very confusing when you really start diving into exactly what does qualify and what doesn't. Let me start off with naming some that are just automatics, and I can't get into all of the details on all, and I'll explain why. But if someone is born with Down syndrome, that's going to be a disability that they're living with that automatically would qualify them, because it automatically qualifies for those disability standards there that the Social Security Administration has set forward. Other ones could be cerebral palsy. Others get a little bit more confusing because there are levels of disability. It could be somebody who is on the autism spectrum that certain levels of well, that's a bad way of describing it, but certain individuals who experience autism might qualify and certain might not. I can say two aspects to this. First of off is this is really tied specifically to Social Security's Blue Book on childhood disabilities. Now, that's getting very specific and something I don't want most listeners to have to worry about, but I do want you to let you know that there is a very, very specific guide that this is tied to. And again, that is Social Security's Blue Book on childhood disabilities.
Well, I ended up pulling them up, and you know, there's two that I guess we should share with our listeners. And some folks out there are going to be really familiar with these standards because they're already going to have dealt with issues with Social Security Administration on these standards. But the definition of a disability, according to Social Security Administration, and this is codified in law as well, but for adults, it's going to be defined as the inability to engage in any substantial gainful activity by reason of a medically determinable physical or mental impairment, which can be expected to result in death or which has lasted or can be expected to last for a continuous period of not less than 12 months. So that's a disability for an adult. For a child under the age of 18, so that's the, you know, different than the 26 tests that we have in the ABLE accounts, but for children under the age of 18, they'll be considered disabled if they have, that person has a medically determinable physical, so again, a doctor is going to have to determine, medically determinable physical or mental impairment or combination of impairments, so it could be multiple impairments that combine to create a disability, that causes marked and severe functional limitations that can be expected to cause death or last. They have lasted or will last for 12 months or more. So those are the two tests. They're very similar, I think, adult and child. But those are the tests, and they're big tests, and it's potentially a big standard to meet.
It is. One thing that I learned really quickly in starting to work with the ABLE plans, first thing we did was establish a working group of professionals throughout the state of Oregon, and actually nationally. They're nonprofits that support individuals with disabilities, state agencies, many, many others, self-advocates, people with disabilities themselves. And what I came to find out is, some of these things that looked so convoluted and so confusing to me weren't to them. And the reason why is they're struggling to prove this not only to us here within the ABLE account, but to Social Security for their benefits, to schools for their special individual education plans, and many, many others. Believe it or not, we do not have a large number of calls that come through the call center focused on this is my specific disability, does it qualify?
Right.
Because we found that many people actually are already working through this process with many other agencies, or they're already utilizing a benefit, might be a Social Security benefit or medical benefit that already qualifies for them. Otherwise, the fail-safe is just getting a physician's form, and this has been used. We had a lady who was well into her 60s that had just moved to the state of Oregon, so she decided to use Oregon's ABLE Savings Plan. And she was very worried. She had just started with a new doctor, and she said, listen, I don't have the documentation proving, and I don't think my new doctor is going to feel comfortable filling out this form. And I said, well, listen, before we start other steps, let's just try. You know, can you contact your doctor and see if they're willing to fill this out? She called me 10 minutes later and saying, listen, I don't even have to go in. My doctor's already seen me. She already can attest that my disability started before the age of 26, and it's of the level that is required. So we have not run into problems this way. Well, we want to make sure people know that even though it's confusing aspect of the code and of the statutes, it's not very confusing when it comes to being able to sign up for ABLE.
Well, and I appreciate sort of the way that the ABLE accounts lean and the way that the Oregon Savings Network and the Oregon government's leaning on this, which is in favor of opening these accounts for persons that qualify and leaning in favor of qualifying that individual. There is, and this is the lawyer cautious side of me that's going to come out, but I can see, though, if a client came to me and said, Noah, I want to open up one of these Able accounts. We're going to get maybe a couple hundred thousand's going to come in over time into these accounts, or I'm going to have family members. They're going to help me raise some money and for these conditions that I have because I need. And you and I are going to talk about some of the payments that can be made, the type of services that can be paid out of these accounts. But anyway, the person comes to me and says, Noah, I'm going to have some significant sums coming into these accounts. Is this the right vehicle for me? And I'd say to them, probably first, let's talk about the qualifying event, the disability and the onset date. And one thing I'd want them to be certain of is that they have a medically determinable onset date, something that's going to stand up evidentiary-wise in court, in the Social Security Administration, particularly if it had to, you know, if push came to shove. Because what you don't want to do, and this has come up for clients of mine in the past, is disqualify someone because they receive a sum of money, because the ABLE account is trying to keep them qualified for the public assistance that they're getting and not disqualify them. You want to make sure that they're not disqualified, because receiving $100,000 could disqualify someone from receiving $10 million over their lifetime.
Noah, you're absolutely right. Thank you for bringing that up. It is a concern of the states that administer these plans, and one of the things that we felt really comfortable with and that we were very excited to see, excuse me, was that we immediately started working with some of the agencies that are administering these very benefits that people are looking to retain. So Social Security Administration, obviously, for SSI and SSDI, different state and federal agencies like CMS for Medicaid, and they were part of the process of developing out these ABLE plans, not only the certification process, but also any types of reporting that the state or the individual is required to do in order to keep these sound and solid and keep them qualifying for their benefits. And so we really appreciated the work that the Social Security Administration and CMS put into, not to mention the IRS as well, into making sure we had all the guidance and the program operating manuals to make sure we were doing this right.
Okay. Well, one thing that you said at the outset, and this is going to be another key difference between the Special Needs Trust and these ABLE accounts, is that I think you said at the outset, this might be an earlier email that you had sent to me as well, if you didn't say it earlier in the show, but that a lot of these accounts that are opened up are managed by the beneficiary. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I think the worst thing that we can do is assume that somebody with a disability can't manage their own bank account or manage their own ABLE account. And so we've worked really hard to make sure that all of our literature, all of our information is speaking to the beneficiary themselves, the person with the disability. About half of our accounts, and we have over 1,800 accounts right now and over $7.5 million saved in these accounts, so people really are using these, they're owned and managed by the beneficiary themselves. There are another half of the accounts that are still owned by the beneficiary. All of this money is always going to be the person with the disability. Excuse me. But there are some people that can manage these accounts on behalf of those individuals, and they're called authorized legal representatives. And those can be one of three people. It could be the parent of the person with the disability. It could be their guardian, if someone has guardianship over that individual. Or it can also be somebody with power of attorney over the management of the funds for those individuals. And so those people can be authorized legal representatives. Basically, they can manage the account on behalf of the individual.
And that starts to draw a corollary or a parallel to the Special Needs Trust, which requires a trustee. The beneficiary is not able to manage that, the trust corpus, the money that goes into that trust. There has to be another person, whether it's someone at the bank or it's a family member, someone that they trust, to be trustee to manage the funds, who then is subject to trust law, because every state has a set of statutes that governs how trustees have to manage those particular accounts. Maybe we'll talk about how that works with ABLE accounts, how you're able to oversee that and manage, ensure that there's not going to be that these accounts maybe are going to be less susceptible to fraud or to some wrongful conduct. So stay with us. We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Know Your Rights.
You wanted to see me?
Jack, Legal has some concerns about the new Jack in the Box marketing campaign.
Why? It just says my teriyaki balls are better than ever, with your choice of steak or chicken, plus veggies and white or brown rice covered in our teriyaki sauce. And then everyone's gonna love my bowls.
Right. You can't say that last part.
So I can't talk about my sweet bowls?
No.
Can I say my bowls are meaty?
Absolutely not.
But I already put up the billboard that says enjoy my bowls.
Oh, no.
Try my teriyaki bowls, only at Jack in the Box. Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there, see how we can help you, and if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com. And we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
Look at all the cars. Lots of colored cars. Ah, there's a blue one. Isn't it pretty? Ooh, look how fast that red one's going. It's red like that stop sign. Like my jacket.
This is a 38-year-old man.
My jacket's not a car, is it? Is my jacket a car? My jacket is red, but it doesn't go fast.
He may sound a little strange to you and me.
Vroom.
But to his 2-year-old son, who's interested in cars and colors, he makes perfect sense.
That's the sound cars make.
When you talk with your child, you build vocabulary, and learning starts long before school does. So follow their lead. Take simple everyday moments, like eating dinner or just watching cars go by, and turn them into learning moments.
Ooh, look, red car.
Yes, it's moving awfully fast.
Blue car.
Yes, the man in the red car is about to meet the man in the blue car. Get himself a pretty pink ticket.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. For more tips, go to bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights, the show dedicated to you, the listener, and educating you on your legal rights and resources available. Today, we're talking ABLE accounts. I have on the phone David Ball from the Oregon Savings Network. And David, right before the break, we were talking about the types of people that might manage these accounts. And often the person under the disability or with the disability that has opened the account might be the person managing it. And then you named family members. Maybe there's a lawyer or a guardian that's also managing, or maybe in place of the person who opened the account is managing that account. So can you tell us, maybe practically speaking, how you talked to us, or you told us earlier about the accounts being open online, but can you tell us more about the practical effects of opening these accounts, and then how people oversee them, how you oversee them, and then what happens to the money? Is it invested? Does it gain interest? How does that work?
Yeah, sure. I can do that, and I can do this pretty quickly. If anyone has ever managed their bank account online, it's very similar to what we do here. The state of Oregon and any other state that manages an ABLE plan has to work with some sort of financial partner. We chose to work with a group called Bank of New York Mellon, a very, very large, very long existing bank that had a lot of experience in this field, and we felt very comfortable in trusting the money in the process. And so they're going to make sure they're doing all of the checks and balances that are required for any type of banking to be done when somebody's opening an account. But it takes about 10 minutes to go online, fill out the information, find a place to put your money, which I'll talk about here, and open up an account. You can also link your other bank accounts to your ABLE account, and that simply gives you a very easy way to put money into your ABLE account and to pull money out of your ABLE account. So that is the process, pretty simple and easy. There are basically four different places you can put your money. There is one FDIC-insured cash option, very similar to any kind of savings account that you're using at a bank. It does pay a little bit better of a rate than most savings accounts at banks, but that is one option. And then there's three different options that are truly investment options. It's a mix of Vanguard funds and one DFA fund. That's more detail than most people need. But it's a mix of different options, and one is for a very conservative option. One is a moderate option, and one is an aggressive option, and you get to kind of decide which one is best for you. We provide you the information of why you might want to choose one or the other, but we don't give you any investment advice, so we're just giving you the information, and the person chooses. And what most people do is they choose, I want a certain portion of my money going in the cash option, and I want the rest going into one of the three different investment options. And that's where the money goes, and hopefully grows, and makes your money work for you.
I love it. And I think that's really helpful for people to have those options available. I think that's set up in a way that's clear, reasonable, helpful, and it just makes common sense. So I think that this ABLE account and the structure is off to a really good start. Now, you know, when you were talking about the practical effects or underpinnings of opening an account, I thought about this GoFundMe idea. Is it possible to link a GoFundMe page to these accounts, or how does money come into the account? I mean, I guess if I'm going to let's say there's a person in my family that has a disability and I want to contribute $1,000, if I put it directly into their account and they transfer to the ABLE account, maybe that's a disqualifying sort of transfer.
Right. No, that's it. We've built in a lot of different options to make sure that doesn't happen. One that you're mentioning right here, GoFundMe, we've done one better. We've actually built that type of system right into the ABLE platform. So we have an
That's fantastic. That's great.
Gifting platform that allows people to set up their own gifting page. They get to set their own goals. They also get to set their own limits, because they may not want people to contribute the full $15,000 for that year, because they might need some of that room to put their own money to keep them under certain limits outside of ABLE. And then they can push that out via social, via email, what have you.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then there's other methods that we've provided people to make sure that the money doesn't go to the individual, it goes straight into the ABLE account, doesn't affect their eligibility for benefits.
That's great. And are there representatives available from like the Oregon Savings Network that help walk people through these options and that setup?
Absolutely. The OregonAbleSavings.com. There's information there. Of course, we have a live chat right there on the website, or of course, we have a call center that people can call at any time.
Oregon Savings, OregonAbleSavings.com.
That's correct.
All right. Let's. Julie's here. She's joined us. But before we get to Julie and we ask her some questions about her involvement with these ABLE accounts, can we talk a little bit about what these ABLE accounts can be used for?
Yes, absolutely. And this is the best part about it is there's very few restrictions. As long as the funds in the ABLE account are used for the benefit of the beneficiary, for the person themselves, you're pretty much set. So here's what the IRS outlined as qualified expenses. It's any expense which helps improve the health, independence, or quality of life for the person. So that include education, housing, basic living expenses like clothing and food, transportation, legal fees, health, all sorts of things, as long as it's helping to either maintain or improve their health, independence, or quality of life.
So there's a situation that came up years ago. We had a client that was receiving federal benefits, Medicare, and then they ended up coming into sum of money from a settlement, and they wanted to use those funds to help build a special accommodated condominium. Mm-hmm. Is that something that an ABLE account could be used to fund or to
Absolutely.
Pay for?
Okay. Absolutely, yes. Upgrades to a house, down payments on a house, rent, and many, many others.
Oh, that's great. I mean, golly, this has been a long time coming, because what you had were people that were receiving these really valuable federal benefits that had to just turn away money. They had to say no to any offer of funds to help them, or from settlements or from other sources.
That's right.
Yeah. Unless they were going to pay for the special needs trust, which is not cheap. And as I said at the outset, it's also clunky and it requires constant management too.
Well, it is one great tool in the toolbox, and we hope that people utilize it when it fits their needs. They can always reach out to us. One other great resource before we get to hear from Julie, who has some incredible tips for us as well, is anybody who wants just general information about ABLE, they should look to the ABLE National Resource Center. It's online. It's ablenrc.org, so the ABLE National Resource Center. It's a nonprofit that puts it on there. It's non-biased information. They can get all the information they want about ABLE there.
Well, thanks for that, David. Don't go anywhere, but let's turn over to Julie. Julie Robinson joined us from Ringler & Associates. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, I think you had some traffic issues.
Just a bit.
Welcome
to Seattle, right?
That's right. Welcome to Tacoma, too. So can you tell us a little bit about what Ringler & Associates does and what your involvement with this is?
Well, we are settlement advisors, so we're involved when any time an individual is receiving money because of an accident, or in many of these cases, a trauma that happened at birth. So we get a lot of calls from lawyers saying, okay, we've got this money coming in. We've got this situation with a disabled minor. What are the options? And really at Ringler, what we try to do is take a full comprehensive approach. We know the settlement or the special needs lawyers. We know all the options. And what happened here where I did the research and found the ABLE account was the smaller cases where a special needs trust might not make sense. The ABLE is a great tool. And the other thing that's super helpful is, although the special needs trust has a trustee and fits a lot of needs, what it doesn't do is create a lot of independence for the disabled. And right. So minors or parents are looking for that for their minors as they grow. They want access to money, and we want to be able to provide that. And so we were able to, in a recent case, fund the ABLE account from the settlement by funding it under that $15,000 limit every year.
So when you're involved in cases that also involve minors and their settlements, usually there's a guardian that's appointed by the court that yes. oversees the case for the minor. They represent the minor's best interest, right?
Yeah.
And so when there's a settlement under Washington law, and I believe every state has the same law, I think there's a model minors.
Yeah, I think in Oregon it's the same for over 25,000.
Yeah. So minors can't just receive these funds directly. So it has to go into some special type of account, right? And that's where you come in and you help set up those types of accounts. And do you help set up the special needs trust? Are you involved in that then?
We do. We work hand in hand. We refer out to the special needs lawyers that we're familiar with in drafting the trust. We're familiar with a bunch of trustees. And really what the structure, the role the structure has in that is it lives outside the trust. Therefore, it's not subject to the annual fees and ongoing annual expenses of the trust. So we're able to save on the larger cases thousands and thousands of dollars with the structure.
With the ABLE account.
I like doing an ABLE. If there's a special needs trust, there should also be an ABLE account, I'd say every time.
I love it. And that's great to have those go hand in hand for big sums to be managed by a trustee, be formally managed in a special needs trust to come up for big payments or big issues. And then to have the ABLE account, which is managed potentially it's managed more locally, managed by the person under the disability or those closest to them to help assist them with the very basic necessary needs without having to call the bank, call a lawyer.
Yeah, how neat to go out to dinner and you've got your ABLE card and you can pay for it. So you're not having to call up a trustee to figure that out.
That's great. The chapter that that governs a lot of these transactions is under the Washington Code, Chapter 11.114. That's a Uniform Transfers to Minors Act, which is involved, I would say, in a lot of these types of settlements and why there's got to be guardians and these extra layers of protection for people that are under the age of majority.
Well, the courts want to make sure that if a minor is involved in an accident and receiving a settlement, that it's there when they're 18.
Right.
And so the structure holds it and then pays out, whether it's for college or for a down payment on a house. We typically will fund it from 18 to 30, somewhere in there.
This is a great resource. I mean, I'm glad we're doing the show today because we're really kind of pushing the envelope and sort of leading the informational charge because people don't know about this. They just don't know. It's such a new law, and it provides such a great benefit. Even though there's caps on the amount, they can still be large caps. I mean, it's a significant amount of money that can really help people. Yeah. Well, this is great. I'm glad that you brought this to my attention, Julie, because you were the sort of the energy behind having this. David, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this this important act and account today.
Oh, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this.
So with us on Know Your Rights was Julie Robinson from Ringler & Associates and also David Ball from the Oregon Savings Network. David, thanks again. Julie, thank you very much. You've been listening to Know Your Rights. Thanks for joining us for this past hour. Hope you tune in next week. Same time, same day, same show. Be safe out there. Take care.